Venezuela's president starts his second term today, presiding over a fractured economy. This is the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. First, though, as Brexit debate continues in the British Parliament, Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe meets British Prime Minister Theresa May to discuss the risks of a disorderly Brexit. Here's the BBC's James Landell.
Japan has a huge stake in Brexit happening in an orderly way. There are 1,000 Japanese companies based in the UK. They employ 150,000 people. They invest £40 billion every year. And so therefore there's a real edge to this rather than just a sort of generic promise of perhaps a trade deal in the future, which of course, you know, they will inevitably discuss. Nissan, Toyota, Honda, all these big manufacturers who make millions of cars are as concerned as other businesses about the potential risks of a disorderly Brexit. So on the one hand, Shinzo Abe's visit here could be, you know, a benefit for Theresa May to come here and say, look, you know, here's a big international figure who's going to come and support her exit deal. But the other side of the coin is he's also expected to warn very, very clearly about the potential risks of a no-deal Brexit. And so he'll also be, a reflection of international concern about just what's going on here in Britain at the moment.
James Landell, let's do the numbers. Global stocks are mostly lower. In the last hour, Ford said it's planning a major European shakeup, expected to result in thousands of job losses. Ford of Europe's profits fell 82% last year, thanks in part to a drop in the value of the pound. The company will focus on more electric and hybrid technology and expanding its commercial vehicle business. And Jaguar Land Rover is expected today to announce 5,000 job cuts as Brexit uncertainty, weak demand in China, and slumping diesel sales take a toll. Now, when Venezuela's president Nicolas Maduro first took office in 2013, the country's economy was troubled by weak growth, debt, and falling oil prices. Today, as he begins a second term, Venezuela's economy is shattered. In 2018, it's thought to have shrunk by 18%. As a result, up to 5 million Venezuelans are estimated to have simply left the country. Here are a couple who have not.
If you eat, you don't get dressed. If you get dressed, you don't eat. And you don't eat the way we used to, meaning you can only buy food or clothes, not both.
The economy's situation is harsh, we can't deny it. But you can't blame only one person.
The BBC's Vladimir Hernandez told me more.
When Nicolas Maduro took power in 2013, the economy was wobbling, but was an economy that was kind of giving people what they needed.
Well, let's fast forward to today, because we're talking about really a shattered economy, hyperinflation hovering around 1,000,000%. One UN report estimates that something like 90% of people are now living in poverty.
It's a huge number, and university studies in Venezuela in the last 2 years have given figures which are even more shocking. They talk about over 80% of people struggling to eat three times a day.
So with oil revenue as well at its lowest level in 3 decades, do we expect that Nicolas Maduro is going to take the economic measures necessary to turn things around?
The Maduro government, its main line, it's that this is all part of sanctions from the US that is causing them problems. Now, those sanctions began much later than when the economy started collapsing. And we have to remember that those sanctions are put on officials and not on the government as such. So Nicolas Maduro's strategy has been to deal with hyperinflation in a very cosmetic way. In the last year, he's converted the currency and taking 3 zeros off it. So what would cost you 4,000 bolivars would now cost you 4, to make it look like, all right, the economy's getting better, so we got new prices. But I was just over the Christmas period reading some archive stuff from Venezuela, and I remember there was a state sort of sponsored newspaper that had the same cover for the last 4 years. And he was saying this year, 2019, would be the year of the economic reactivation. And he's been saying that for 4 years already.
Vladimir Hernandez. Can dating apps be successful in a country where the majority of marriages are still arranged? The BBC's Manuela Zaragoza reports.
In the world of the popular internet dating app Tinder, finding your love interest is a question of swiping left or right on someone's photo. That's a commercial for Tinder in India, just one of a plethora of dating apps making inroads into a market it says is one of the fastest growing after it launched there in 2016. We asked young people on the streets of Delhi what they made of dating apps.
Most of my friends use it for hookup. Some of them use for a long-term relationship.
I went on a couple of dates, but most of the guys there are not that great.
But dating apps are a big departure from traditional Indian attitudes to relationships. Arranged marriages are still the norm. Mandy Ginsberg is the CEO of Tinder's parent company, Match.com.
There's 100 million single Indians, so it's a huge market. The world has changed so much for 20-somethings in India, too, where they're not sharing desktops with their family. They've got their own smartphones. They have a little bit more independence.
Dating apps may be relatively new in India, but matchmaking technology isn't. Websites helping Indians find a marriage partner have been around since the internet was born. Gaurav Rakshit is the CEO of Shaadi.com, one of India's biggest matchmakers.
It's very much about two families coming together. And given the nature of matchmaking we used to do, it used to be called an arranged marriage. Now that's what's changed with the internet and people wanting to represent themselves. But what hasn't changed is that it's still very much families coming together. It's just who's driving the process is now different. Most of India isn't ready for dating. What it's done, it's made online matchmaking a lot more palatable. As they get brought online into online matchmaking through the Tinders, suddenly online matchmaking doesn't seem like such a bad idea for them. And then when they want to get married, having already experienced this service, Shaadi.com doesn't seem like such a bad place to go.
And that report by Manuela Zaragoza. And I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report coming to you live from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.